Hi, Mike Overholt here. As teachers, we are constantly looking for teaching methods that are socially relevant and pedagogically meaningful. This two-pronged goal to be cool and educational doesn't always present itself easily. The ever-cool and ever-educational Socrates, however, may offer some helpful direction. In Book 7 of The Republic, he insists, "Don't beat your students over the head with their lessons, but use their downtime so that you can more clearly see what they're naturally inclined to do." His point? Begin with fun. Maudie Crabtree is an assistant professor in African American Studies here at the College of Charleston who is using Americans' love of entertainment for several important ends. One is to inform students of opportunities in African American Studies. A second is to entice them to think critically about movies, both their magic and their messages. I recently had the privilege of speaking with Maudie about her ongoing film festival called Afrofuturism on Film. If you get a chance to attend the two remaining events on February 18th and February 25th, you're in for a real treat.
Dirty computer walking by. If you look closer, you'll recognize I'm not that special. Crashing slowly, the bugs are in me. Dirty computer breaking down.
Black people have been written out of the future in so many different ways, right? Whether we're talking public policy, but even in like sci-fi, right? You don't have that many movies about black people in the future. And so what Afrofuturism is doing is taking a claim to a future for black people, and one that is in many ways, right, not always, but in many ways a more liberated, freer future.
Will you begin by telling us how your film festival is conducted?
So the film festival is usually the same day of the week, four weeks in a row. So we've been doing it on Monday nights the last couple times that I've been in charge of the film festival. And I usually choose four films that speak to some particular theme. And the theme often is tied to a speaker we're bringing in and a course that we're teaching, as it was in this case. In the fall, we brought in a speaker who's writing about black speculative fiction written by women, and there was a course on Afrofuturism in the fall, so the film series complemented both of those. The venues for the events, there are a couple spots on campus that are really set up like movie theaters. So there's Septima Clark Auditorium and the Education Center, Maybank 100. There are a few others that kind of feel a little bit more like an actual theater. And so when we have popcorn and refreshments there, it feels like you're at the movies. I think the first one that I did was a bunch of Spike Lee films. And it didn't have as much of a theme other than Spike Lee was the director of all of them. And it was much more of a social event than anything else. And we originally didn't have discussions afterwards. But then when we did one on mass incarceration, and those were all documentaries, we did have short discussions after. And those films were also, at least two of the films were also required for my class on mass incarceration and its roots. And so for the second one, we were much more intentionally and deliberately trying to tie it to curricula, to our curriculum, and specifically to this class. When we watched Get Out, you know, it was a fun bunch of students and faculty. It was, you know, 80 people watching this film. Many of the, almost everyone there had seen it before. And so it was like a fun moment. And then afterwards, my colleague, Anthony Green, did a whole discussion afterwards that was really productive. And students in my intro to African American Studies classes also talked about it in class. That was what our discussion was for the next day that we had class too. So it is social, and I think they really enjoyed the film because it's a very good film, very entertaining film, also very powerful film. But also it was a way to think about how race is still a very pressing issue, thinking about what otherwise might be understood as like black paranoia. But in the film, black paranoia is what saves you.
Some of the best practices you've discovered now that you've done several film festivals?
I think it's important to choose films that at least two of the four are likely to be fairly popular already. So for this film festival this time around, we watched Blade, and we're going to be screening Black Panther. Knowing you know, that those are films that are very well known, very popular, and will likely bring in students. That way, the other films that I'm also putting in there have some support to get interest in the film series. And I think if it were just more obscure films, it would be harder to get students to come out. But I can get students to come see Pumzi, which is this film about what drought could potentially do in East Africa. I can get them to watch that film if they know it's a part of the series with Black Panther in it. And both films are incredible, but I think the name recognition of Black Panther helps with the less recognizable films. I also think it's important to make sure that in the brief introduction that I give students and faculty and staff a sense for what my theme is and what my intentions are for the film series, but also what it is that I'm hoping that they get out of, or things to look for, I guess, in the particular film that they're watching. And I would also say that afterwards, having that discussion with a faculty member has also been really valuable, and in part to kind of spread the word. You know, I have a different faculty member doing each discussion. So part of it is also so I'm not doing all of the work, but a lot of it is also just to bring in students who are in classes with those other professors who might be more inclined to come if their professor's the one leading the discussion.
There's more buy-in,
yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah, and it also emphasizes the interdisciplinarity of our program, right? So this time we have, you know, someone who does African American studies and sociology doing the first discussion. The second one is literature and African American studies. Third one is history and African American studies. Fourth one is religious studies, history, African American studies, and poetry, right? So you have, just in one series, you really get to see how interdisciplinary African American studies is simply by looking at who's even doing the discussions. And you then bring in faculty and students from, hopefully, you know, all over campus to, you know, attend as well.
I think there's a tacit argument that says if we can get students to think about film critically, mm-hmm. they will think about other parts of their lives critically, mm-hmm. too. What might be some of those other parts that you would love to see them apply more critical thinking to?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep on going back to, I think, Get Out, and another film that we screened last time around was I'm Not Your Negro, which is a documentary about James Baldwin. And I think for a lot of them, those kinds of films really spoke to things that they see in their everyday lives that they've noticed but haven't necessarily had the vocabulary or the framework to give voice to what it is that's happening. There's something about what symbolically you're seeing in Get Out, or what you're seeing Baldwin tease out about American society, that I think we kind of sense sometimes but don't know how to articulate. And those are the kinds of things that I think that students can really get out of films. And I'm hoping that, like, for example, when we talk about Black Panther, that anti-colonialist thread in the film, again, hopefully reframes how they think about even going to Western art museums that have things that were taken, often stolen, you know, from places like Egypt. Like, almost everything in the British Museum, honestly, is stolen from these other parts of the world where the British were colonial powers. And so, you know, thinking about the material things that have been stolen, but the, you know, the deeper kind of spiritual and intangible things, seemingly intangible things that have been stolen, like nationhood, you know, identity, you know, economic possibilities. I think it opens up doors to thinking differently about the U.S. and the rest of the West in relationship to the global South.
Influence in the Mediterranean, mm-hmm. At the beginning of the 19th and 20th centuries. Mm-hmm. ISIS mm-hmm. destroyed a lot of temples. I mean, they would, you know, photograph and videotape blowing up temples. Mm-hmm. Is it possible or correct to see a parallel between that type of erasing history mm-hmm. with what is now living in the British Museum?
It's different in that the objects themselves haven't been destroyed, but they have been, you know, removed from the context where they make the most meaning. But there has been an erasure. If you think about it in terms of, like, African-Americans, right? African-Americans who have ancestors who were forcibly taken from Africa through the transatlantic slave trade into the Americas, had so much stolen from them. I mean, one of the biggest struggles if you're African American and trying to do genealogical research is you cannot find records very easily going back more than a few generations. Most of the records of enslaved people didn't have last names. Sometimes they didn't even have any names listed. And so being able to figure out who your kin within the Americas is difficult enough, but knowing where your people are from in Africa is even more difficult. And there are ways in which things certainly survived, cultural things certainly survived. You see it in naming practices, you see it in African-American music, religious ceremonies, or religion more generally. You see it in speech, you see it in all sorts of ways. Some of those connections are almost impossible at this point to reconstruct. And so there's a reason why you have a lot of African Americans going to Ghana to visit Elmina, to see slave forts. It's because it's, even though they have no idea if that's where their people came from or where, and they probably have people from all over the place, it's a way to feel connected to a past that colonialism and slavery severed or nearly severed for a lot of people. So I think the erasure in the American context, when we're talking about African Americans, has less to do with objects being taken and put into museums or stolen or destroyed, as in with ISIS, but the historical connections themselves being so difficult to trace with any sort of definitive kind of, I don't know, without any sort of definitive proof that it's really hard for people to know who they are on that level because of that. And that's the kind of violence that Killmonger, again, in Black Panther, although he knows a bit more, right, than most African Americans, right, because his father is from Wakanda. He knows his father, where his father is from. But what that character represents in that film is really complicated. He is sort of the bad guy, but he's also clearly hurting from the rejection and the distance between himself as an African American and Wakandans. And I think that pain is real. Like, I think a lot of people watching the film really felt for Killmonger precisely because he represents this African American desire for connections to Africa.